This year is brought to you by Eshel Publications. Eshel Publications is a non-profit organization dedicated to spreading the Torah, Shiurim, and Sefarim of Rabbi Aaron Lapiansky. For sponsorships or more information, visit eshelpublications.com.
Okay, so we're holding over here in the middle of Perek Mezayin, where he speaks about he's in the middle of explaining why it is that Olam Haba is not listening to Torah. He brings the Chazal that Nevi'im lo nisnabu Olam Reis Mashiach, but not Olam Haba. And his point is that Nevuah itself is dafka something that has some physical aspect to it, not something that's a Nivdal. So we're holding over here in the middle of Perek Mezayin. So he's going through the inyanim that Chazal say Nevi'im were not misnabe, except for things that are less, things that are not so abstract. So Chol Nevi'im Nesnabe Lemeisi Bitoi the Talmud Chacham. V'dava Zegamke Ki Efshe Shetia Nevuah B'dava Shud Nivdol Ma'arom Legamri. So the same idea in the Chazal, but Talmud Chacham himself, they didn't say Nevuah. It means the Ruchni is the Kedarga that Nevuah can reach is dafka something that has some shaychus with Olam Hazeh. So somebody who's supportive of a Talmud Chacham, the arena, the plane of activity is gashmius with a ruchniistic end in sight. So Nevuah is shaykh to that. So the person who supports Torah in one way or another, he himself is not a ruchnistic person per se, but he is a person who's taking the physical and being mizdabik to ruchnis. Now he explains these three different things that Chazal mentioned. What are these three things that are, meisi bitoy and meisi pragmatia? So he explains, there are three broad avenues that a person uses to channel Ava. Yetzar is the sum total of drives of the guf, the desire to physically exist. So first thing is that in the physical drives of a person, which tend to want to the guf to be very, very, content with itself, a person should channel that to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The cholma oitcha, So these are things that a person feels a sense of self, and when that becomes a bridge to the other, that's ava. So the fact that I'm a shot of somebody, my mamin, I'm a shot of somebody in my nefesh, I'm a shot of somebody in my guf, that those are expressions of ava. B'zeh shama, hamasi bita tam chachem, what is that? Ki kasha meisi bita tam chachem, hari gufoi dovek bita tam chachem. She bita, min yoi tzcha lotzav ki gufoi nechshav, hari gufoi bita tam chachem. So it's a type of dveikus through guf, the fact that one of my children is married tam chachem. Voice of akma tam chachem, dovak boi bin nafshoi, ki kol maase matna shalde maise odom, umina nefesh,
So
Ela Nefesh. So this is very interesting how he attaches. The next one, where he speaks about being Mahanatam Chacham and Chassav as being Mammon, is obviously Dava Pashat. That's Mamoinai. But Oisepek Matya, as opposed to Mahan and Chassav, so the knach that the Maral wants to give is that a person's, there's two things, the mashal. I can partner with somebody in a way where I give him money to do what he wants to do. So that's net monetary. I'm giving you the money, and it means my chibur to you is, I want you to have, and I'm willing to give that you should have. When a person is oisik rakmatim somebody, when I'm taking on somebody as a business partner, so a lot more, A, I don't really intend that you should be getting money at my cheshbon. Hopefully you're contributing. But the point is, it's an involvement. It's a nafshistic involvement in another person. And that's why it's shaykh to b'chol nafshicha. Whatever I'm engaged in, I'm taking him along. Okay, so these are the ways he explains this chazal. Now he has another knach over here. So he says if we look at a person's own pnimius, let's take a person and sort of divide up the person's mitzias. So the seichel of the person is kilo de tamet chacham that the rest of the body is supporting. The rest of the body is a physical apparatus, and it's sending food and oxygen to the brain. So the tamet chacham, the person, is the seichel. Vuhu adam atzmai, and this is what we would call the etzem ha'adam, whereas the other parts are ancillary. The seichel, the dasa person, is the person, and the other organs are supporting organs. Ke'ena adam rak shu bal chai maskel, because that's zekel adam. The elush loish advarim mischaber meilav. Shaguf mitzaros haval seichel shutam chacham. Va'oid mischaber nefesh al seichel, v'ze prakmatil al seichel. So the nefesh, which in the Maral's language is always what we call a person's emotional drives, ambition, etc. So that's mischaber to the seichel. V'yoseh prakmatil seichel. Asher kol maaseh mat naaseh d'yad nefesh. Shupol v'yoseh asakav shaloi. So when a person, so the Talmud Chacham Shaboy, the seichel and das in a person is in a sense inanimate. It's not an engine. The what drives a person so much, when a person says, I want to become a real Talmud Chacham, I'll do what it takes, and so on, I'll sacrifice. The Talmud Chacham Shaboy is the essence, but the driving force that pushes a person to do something is what he calls nefesh. It's those emotional drives. V'chein, he says, so the nefesh is the one pragmatia. It's very, very interesting. Business was looked upon askance by socialists, communists, et cetera, and the argument was a very, very cogent argument. Here is somebody who's contributing nothing, and this whole ASIC of business contributes nothing. You're not making the shoes, you're not wearing the shoes, you just make money off the shoes. So what's the justification for it? So when they constructed a society without business, they ended up with a dead society. It was perfect. They had the shoemakers, the shoe wearers, they had everything but shoes. There wasn't any shoes, because the person that that pushes the factory manufactures shoes and takes the shoes and entices the customer to wear them and brings it back and forth. The lifeblood is the business. And when you kill that, you have a mummy, nothing. So the koyach of nefesh in a person is pragmatia. Pragmatia is the dynamic force of economics, as opposed to just the items. The driving force is that. So all of the society is like each individual person. Any living organism, whether it's the person himself or society as a whole, is divided into sichlius slash chachma and supportive mechanism. So he sums up the moral that these are the different inyanim that are shayach to both Adam Prati and society as a whole. So basically, he's going to, he said all these inyanim that I spoke about until now, they're just agav grara. Kein adok machas shalim ka kol hu bab nevua kein a nevua rak bedovish shet sifal amaza. He said the bottom line, referring back to the question. Now he's basically summing up the answer. He's gone a bit off the mark. The answer is nevua cannot reveal everything. Ki ein a nevua rak bedovish shet sif olam hazeh. Avo dovish nipta legamri in olam hazeh lo yipol be nevua klal. So, okay, you're right. I can't see any visions or anything like that. So Akash Baruch Hu could have just said, by the way, there's another piece to the puzzle. This is notification that there's Olam Haba in the way. Nevi'im are not a bulletin board. Nevua is a certain conveying of a Dvar Hashem, and if it doesn't fit into Nevua, it doesn't come through Nevua. It's not a kind of just a way to bring stuff into this world. It's a mahalach Nevua. It's a tfisa. So the psukim that Chazal dashed are very right. I want to speak a minute about this point about the remes, and it's a very rachotik remes and so on. So when you take a look at Chazal in Sanhedrin and the dashing Olam Haba, they're very, very far-fetched remozim. And you ask yourself, what's the pshat in that? They're not going to make anyone a believer. It's one thing if a person purports to believe in Torah's Moshe, and I show you before Shabbasha, so either belong with me. When I come along with those level of remozim, what's the pshat in that? So let's give a mashal for it. Imagine I meet a person who I know nothing about him. And the person conducts himself well, and the person speaks nicely, and everything about him is fine. And then someone says, yeah, but you notice, when you sneezed, he's jumped up, and that's a little strange, this and that. So I'll say to him, you know what, Bemis, you're dreaming things. Come on. And I would be right. That's dogma one. Dogma two is, I know somebody stole. I know, I saw it. And now I'm interviewing him. So no person is a perfect actor. And this person is very good. He'll pretend innocence, he knows that. But if I look carefully enough, somewhere along the line, there'll be a hint of it. Because a person is a person. Everything leaves a mark on a person. So there's a very, very big difference between a clue that stands on its own as a gateway to reveal something, in which case it has to be a very, very strong clue. Two, where I know the emes independently, and now I'm looking with the hanacha that there has to be some remes to it, rightfully so. So the gilui of Olam Haba wasn't nisgala through nevuah and b'melna through Torah. So there are no parshas and no psukim, period. And therefore, there's not going to be even any remez broad enough to be called the gateway to seeing it. But since I know it's emes, and Torah is koilal every emes, even the nister in Torah is meruma somewhere, because if something much is hidden in the backs of my house, so I can't see it, but there's going to be some test that will show it up. Lamashal, I can take an X-ray to backs. I can do something else. I can see if my instrument is good enough. I can see how much pressure there is on the house with the box, without the box. It's there. Something that's there has a simon. So the since we know mitzad Torah Shebal Peh that Olam Haba exists, finding the remez is very valid. It also helps us get some insight by understanding where the remez came up in the Torah. It gives us some insight about the quality of it. There's a reason why the Torah is Meramez in this Pasha. It's very fascinating. The Rambam's Mokar for Mashiach, the Rambam's Aleph Mokar for Mashiach is Bilam, the voice Bilam. Now, Erenav La'atash, Erenav La'achshav, that is something that, again, it's a very, very, for somebody who doesn't believe in it, it's not going to be the evidence. But if I believe in it, this is where it came about. But now I need to ask myself, the Shaila, why is Bilam the Nabi for it? That's a very valid question. And that will teach us something. So he says, there's going to be a very far-fetched remez because Olam Haba is so far from us, but still there'll be a remez to it. There is no such thing as something that leaves no mark if it's part of something else. Yeshe writes him Lahashvat Veino Elu the Kenevim or Yeroyim Damashem is Barach as in Volaklo. She said some people asked them what I said that Nevim Aspinga Rishparchu, Kishparchu is Nivdal. So you see a Novi can associate as Nivdal. So Mal says the Kusha shall have who. Kahu Yisparch Imshu Nivdal in Nivdalam Haze, she spark Paisam and Higoi. However it works, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is part and parcel of Anhag of this world. There's Hashkacha, there's Bria. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose a Chibur with this world in a certain context. And that's why, Lamashal, it says that if a person asks Malamala, Malamata, and so on, you know, it's bad. Because that's the context within which HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not Megal himself at all. So anything within the box that's called Brias Olam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence is attainable because he chose to be Mischabed to this world. So Hanhog of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is definitely attainable. And Nevuah comes in through that. Anything that's really beyond that, Lefanim, Le'achar, and so on, that is no Shaychus. Us, and therefore we have no way to attain it. There's the shyness that, you know, when we speak of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the highest dagger that we can speak of is called Ein Sof. And even that, those words Ein Sof, is still relevant to us. Anything beyond, so to speak, is zero. There are no words because there's no chibur to this world. Anything that has a chibur, we can talk about. There are words for it. The words may be abstract. They may be just kind of markers, but it allows us to deal with it. Anything beyond is beyond. If Torah is not the pshat, what's the right word for the pitch? Kadosh Baruch Hu is coming along and saying, Rabbi Isai, let me tell you what kind of wonderful things I have waiting for you, and so on. A Torah is emes. What is the emes in the world? So something that cannot be expressed correctly is not expressed correctly. It's not a sales pitch. The Kuzari has interesting a similar teretz in a certain way, in a much more practical way. The Kuzari speaks about why Olam Haba is not mentioned, and more so, why is it that the things that are mentioned are very physical? There'll be rain, there'll be peace, there'll be food, so on. So the Kuzari says, it's very easy to promise Olam Haba. There ain't nobody going to be able to deny it, and you're not going to be able to prove it. So when I come along to you and I say, do this and this, and you'll get a lot of Olam Haba. Well, okay. I mean, I can't call the bluff. Masha'in came. If there are promises about Olam Hazeh, and those promises are not fulfilled, it's leaving yourself open for being refuted. That's a key to emes. Anything that I promise that can't be refuted is not going to work. I once saw somebody, I don't remember the kind, someone was writing about when he was a young boy, and he grew up in the Midwest somewhere, very, you know, simple believer. I don't, and there was a preacher on radio who said that if you send him in a dollar or whatever it is, you get a special schooler that will save you from something so bad you'll never even know. It's such a yeshua, you'll never even know that tzara is going to happen when you have it in you. It's such a big yeshua. And as a young boy, it spoke to him quite well. I mean, not only will it be safe from a tzara, but it's such a good yeshua that I won't even know from it. I'll go upon him. Okay, let's start the next perek. He's going to continue over here with a whole bunch of more reasons why it's not written. And one of them actually includes the Kuzari's reason about Tareitz HaShakir. Okay, you do say that, you know, it's something that's, you can promise the sky if you want. That's a very practical Tareitz. By the way, the Kuzari also says this. It's very interesting. He says this on this reason, understanding why the Torah is mayrich on extraordinary details, names and places, numbers, and, you know, like why? So the Kuzari says a very interesting point. He makes a very interesting point. If you ever need to testify or you're being interrogated, so stay away from details. as long as you speak in grand sweeping statements, it's very hard to catch a lie. Yes, I had interaction with this person, but I can't remember when. Sort of one of those years. The venue, a little bit cloudy by me. It could have been in a restaurant, could have been a hotel, could have been my house, could have been this, could have been this. The less details you give out, the less easy it is to catch somebody at a lie. Once you start dropping details, then you're going to have to come up with, there will be places where you can nail the person. Eidem Zomim, you need to have minimal, you need to be able to say where you were so that Eidem Zomim come along and say, Imani Yisab, by saying. So Eidem need to give enough information that we can be mazim them. So if the Torah, if you just speak about stories, they're not allowing themselves to be refuted. Yes, there was a tribe that wanted when, who, how, what. If there are no details, then you're not leaving yourself open to be refuted. If you give places, names, dates, and things like that, then you have to be sure of those specifics, because all it takes is somebody living in the area saying there's no such thing. Rabbi Shapiro told us once that there was a yid dropped into some sort of, like in Europe, in some sort of chassidish shtibel b'mincha ma'ariv, and the Rebbe was telling Sipur tzaddikim, and he spoke about a certain tzaddik in a certain town by a certain river that did this, did that, did the other thing, some sort of neis moifes, whatever it was. So this guest pops up and he says, Rebbe, I live in the town. There's not a single river in the town. What are you talking about? So the Rebbe said, take the wine off the table. This yid is has emunas psulas. He's lacking in emunas chachamim. So if you leave yourself open to have very specific dates or whatever it is, then you're at least allowing for emes. The Rambam says, well, I guess minyan, the Rambam Mordechai says, how come the Torah lists all these names of places and so on, especially now we're starting with Beshalach and the places they went to and so on. He says these names were known to people for a long time. People knew exactly where these places were. Today we don't know, but they were known. And a person could have written a story that Klal Yisrael went to places that were doable. Place they had food, they stole the food, they took the food. The nace of keeping a nation alive 40 years without food and water, except must be the Achanes, would be lost. People would say, yeah, they foraged for food, they stole from people, they bartered Akasha. He said these places were known, and therefore, when people knew these places, knew exactly where they went, and they knew that these places are arid and that devoid of any food or drink or anything habitable. That sort of gives us the sense, the clear sense of what was over there. Okay, what's
What shot in the Kuzari, no one could say bring a raya to Torah from Zchariah, look, tzaddikim have everything good and Rishayim have everything bad, right?
But in a bigger, so, but first of all, when those things were true, Klal Yisrael as a Klal, when they did, I mean, all of Tanakh is when Klal Yisrael did good and things prospered. When Klal Yisrael went off the derech, there was a much more immediate hashgacha, because you had Klal Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael at the time in Nevi'im. There was a very strong correlation between their prospering, and they were right in saying if things are going awry, like Yeshua and Ochran, as soon as they lost the battle in Ai, he said something's gone wrong over here. There must have been something wrong. That type of anhaga was only true at that time. Today, that anhaga is not. But on the other hand, even though it's vague, a person looks back and says, Klal Yisrael surviving and existing and thriving is incredible. I always think about it. If somebody, a reasonable person, was standing in 1945 and he was asked, what are the chances that there'll be a Jewish people or Torah community in 100 years from now, in 50 years now, a reasonable person would say zero. East Europe was gone, killed. America was nothing. Israel was nothing. And 70 years later, we have a Torah community that possibly never existed before in Eretz Yisrael and in America, you know, and it incredible. It's not, you know, there's no place to put a finger on the nace, but it's there, you know, that it defies all understanding. Why there's no such thing. Did you ever meet a third generation Ukrainian in America? An American goyda can tell you, the Alter Zeta was from Lvov. He had no Zeta, he had an Alter Zeta, and he wasn't from Lvov. He has no idea where he was. Zero. There's no such thing. And Yidden are still Yidden. The assimilation is a normal process. So when you have people, you have African Americans, so they look different, and therefore they're, you know, it's a, so people are keeping them aside. You can say whatever you want. I mean, give a Jew does a nose job and he looks like any other guy. So what's the pshat? Why so many Jews have assimilated, and yet it, as a whole, we've, you know, Muslim, if those things mean something, right? They're not, you know, it's very hard to put the finger on the nace itself, but if you step back and take a look at it, it is incredible. Okay. Good. Good.